Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we are up to our story, Yaakov, and some quick background to catch us up as to where we are up to. So we're going through the third episode between Yaakov and Esav, as described in the Sefer Bereishis, in the Torah. We are up to now Yaakov's return from 20-plus years with his uncle Lavan. He is preparing for war. What we've already done is we've gone through the text, all the verses leading up to it. Yaakov has sent messages to his brother Esav, which Esav responds with coming out with his 400 men. Yaakov becomes afraid. He does his famous three things. He prepares for war. He splits his camp into two, as we've seen. He davens, as was referenced. I use this class as great preparation for all of my talks. I get great information out of this class. He davens, and then he sends his gifts. That's what we finished last week. He sends over all of the gifts, and that's where we're up to now, the famous battle with the angel. So we're going to start that today, Mirtz Hashem, and we will go through Rashi, Ramban, Rav Hirsch, as we're going to learn the verses inside as to what takes place. That's where we're up to. He has sent over all of his gifts. He concluded that with, let's start on the white sheets. We're on page 369 on your white sheets. We're going to start with Rashi. I'll start there while you guys all find your places. We learned last week how he separated all of the gifts into to make it seem they were even greater than it was originally, so that Esav will be overwhelmed. And he says he hopes that this will succeed. Let's start with verse 22. Pasuk Chasvei is on the top of page 369. The tribute passed on before him while he spent that night in the camp. So again, we're setting up our story. Yaakov is on his way back into the land of Israel. He has a large camp with him. He's got his 11 wives, 4 wives, 11 children. He's got a lot of cattle because he sends over 500 of them, and that's simply the gift that he sends to his brother Esav. He's got this big party. He's preparing for war. And the Torah says right after he sends everything to his brother Esav, it passed on before him, and he spent that night in the camp. Let's start with Rashi. Rashi says, the language the Torah uses is Vatavur HaMincha Al Panav, that the tribute passed. Now again, the English here translate that simply as before him. But if you actually are familiar with the Hebrew, what does it mean it passed Al Panav? More on his face. So says Rashi, Al Panav, literally on his face. We're in verse 22 in the bottom in Rashi, which has the same meaning as before him. Okay, so Rashi tells us that's why Art Scroll translates it. We've mentioned it many times. Art Scroll believes themselves to be not just a translation, but a commentary. They are translating based on Rashi's commentary. And Rashi says, before on his face literally means before him. So they read it, in English, before him. But as the meanings of the Torah are so layered, the Torah wrote that it was on his face. Says Rashi, brings us another example. And then he says, the Nagadic Midrash interprets Al-Panav as follows. Afhu shorui bekas. Yaakov was also in a state of anger, that he needed to do all of this. Al panav is sometimes used as the charon af. We use the word panav or af as a language of anger, so that Rashi sees or quotes us from the Medrash that the Torah uses a language to hint at us as two things were going on. A, he sent over all of these things, and he's afraid, and he's trying to prepare, and he's also himself feeling that anger, that this is what I need to do to appease my brother Esav. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I think it was from Golda Meir we quoted, when Yaakov, we referenced it to Rashi that we learned in the very beginning, that Yaakov had two fears. The Torah uses two words when Yaakov was afraid. He was afraid that he would be killed, and he was afraid he would have to kill. And the fear of having to kill is also a problem. Why do I have to be in this position that I need to do this? Right? That was Golda Meir's quote. Not only do we can forgive the Arabs for killing our children, but we can never forgive them for making our children into killers. But that's how we have to now train our children to kill. We have to train our children to fight. That we can't forgive. So Yaakov here actually expresses a similar idea. He was also angry. I need to do all this? Now, if you remember the Medrash that we saw also, the Medrash took Yaakov to task because who instigated this whole episode? This was Yaakov. So Yaakov sent the messengers. Yaakov is the one who said, I'm coming. Medr said, he's a sleeping dog on the side. Just walk past him. Leave him alone. Why do you have to start up? But meanwhile, he did. And now he's got to go through all this. And so the Rashi, the Medrash hints that Yaakov also had that charonah, is approaching this with a little bit of anger. Let's move on. But he got up that night. So we learned, remember we went through all the verses. We said, this is an interesting thing. It tells me he stayed that night. He got up the night. What happened that night? So we'll address that now. Vayakom balaylahu. He got up that night. And he took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 children. And he crossed over this ford, this little river of known as Yabok. Okay, let's take a look. Rashi and Rabban is going to have a lot to say on this. Let's start with Rashi in the bottom of our page here. His 11 sons. Esasher achadasar yeladov. V'dinon heichon haisa. We know the Torah told us he's actually had 12 children. He only has 11 out of his 12 sons. But the Torah's already told us of the birth of 12 children. He has 11 sons and he has Dina. The Torah, they're midrashim as to whether or not they were twins that were born with all of the Shvatim. But leaving that aside, the Torah actually tells us about Dina's birth. So we know there are 11 boys and one girl. The Torah now tells us, who does he cross over? We give us a whole list. His two wives, his two maidservants, his 11 sons. We're missing somebody, says Rashi. Where was she? Says Rashi, quoting from the Medrash, Nosna Bateva. Yaakov had put her into a chest, V'no'al Befaneha, and closed it over her, Shelo Yitein Ba Esav Einav, so that Esav should not set his eyes upon her.
But that Teva is also the word that Noah...
Very good.
...in, and also Moshe, right?
Okay, we do find the word... there's a word...
Just Noah,
yeah.
Right?
Noach is definitely in a teva. Does the Torah use the word teva by Moshe? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember that either, but yeah.
We'll find out in 2 weeks when we read Sefer beginning Parsha Shmos.
We could have put her in a different kind of box, another name.
Okay, but either way, exactly wherever she's put, she's hidden away.
Yeah.
Point is, says Rashi, why is she missing in the Pasuk? To hint at the fact that you wouldn't have seen her if you were, obviously she wasn't left behind. She's there with them, but she's not listed because you wouldn't have known that she was there. Why does Yaakov not want Esau to know that she was there? Because he would probably want to marry her. Apparently she was of great beauty. Right behavior or inappropriate behavior? Why is Yaakov afraid? He doesn't want Esav to take his daughter Dina. Correct or incorrect?
Correct.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Very interesting. Why was it correct?
Because she could have been a good influence on
her. You're saying it's an incorrect behavior?
Well, that's what I've heard.
Well, that's what you're about to read. But if you're a father, you're Yaakov, and you have your beautiful daughter Dina, and you have your wicked brother Esav, so Yaakov doesn't want her to get mixed up with him. He doesn't want Esav to see her, says Rashi, but that was inappropriate. Inappropriate. Ulekach ne'enash Yaakov. It's for this that Yaakov was punished. Shimana me'ochi, that he withheld her from his brother. He actively went ahead, didn't just let events play out, see whether or not they would be interested in each other, see whether or not there'd be a connection. He wasn't interested. He withheld her from Esav. Shema tachzirena lemutav. She may have returned him to a more virtuous conduct. And she fell into the hands of Shechem as punishment for Yaakov, to Yaakov.
I'm not crazy about that.
Hold on 1 second. Let me say one more thing and then you can tell me your problems. 1 second. The Maral points out, how did the Medrash know this? Where is the connection between this? So the Medrash points out, if we find such an incident of Shechem, who abducted Dina, in the Torah, as listed, it's inconceivable, says the Maral, that such a thing would happen to somebody like Yaakov if it were just haphazard on its own. Such an event, where a daughter of Yaakov is abducted by a person like Shechem, has to be a response to something. And, says the Maharal, the tzaddikim of the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Torah never shies away from saying their imperfections. The Torah is meant to be a guide for us to learn how to live our lives. We find from the beginning, literally from the beginning of Adam all the way to the end, the Torah is not hesitant to tell us the mistakes of the Gedolei Yisrael so that we can learn and improve from them. And those are not said for naught. If there, the Maral says, Chazal connected the dots. If we have an incident of Shechem, that such a thing should happen to Dina, it has to be as a result of something. The fact that Dina is not mentioned here, why is she not mentioned? Says the Moral, that's where Chazal got it to put it together. She clearly had been hidden away, and as a punishment to that, Yaakov suffers through the abduction of Dina. It could have been that Esav would see her and say, I want that one to marry, and then Yaakov would say, well, as you are now, no way.
Is he going to really listen to him?
But all that Rashi's saying is, you did not provide Esav with a reason. You took away from him the reason to say, maybe my behavior is off. In other words, there's a difference between saying, get married,
right,
and I have the hope that over the course of your marriage, she'll influence him. Versus saying, I just want him to see her and say, I want to marry her. And Yaakov would say, as you, no way.
But you're doing Dan Lahav's course. This man does not deserve Dan Lahav's course. His behavior has not proved in any which way.
I'm just saying, Chazal are telling us it's been 20 years since Yaakov has seen him. It's been 20-some-odd years.
Yeah.
He's preparing for war. He doesn't know what he's going to get. All the Chazal are saying is that, Yaakov, you withheld the opportunity for Esav to be inspired to change. He didn't say you didn't give her to him as marriage and say, work your marriage, Dina. Maybe that would have been impossible. You withheld the opportunity to be inspired to want to change. Maybe had he seen her, he would have wanted to change. And you didn't even give him that opportunity because he wasn't able to see her.
Right.
I don't know. I'm saying here we're talking about Yaakov and his daughter Dina and Esav and Chazal see in Yaakov's withholding her, keeping her from him.
Right.
So what happens is, well, you try that, so Shechem will get him, will get her. And the Chazal connect the two. I'm not disagreeing with you in the sense of a parent would want to protect their children.
Right.
That I totally agree with. And I happen to also agree that I experience has not shown me that in marriage itself you can change somebody like that.
Right.
Whether or not somebody can be inspired to make changes in life in order to get married, I have seen.
Right. And marriage does change people to an extent.
Yeah, but not that much. 100%.
Right.
You don't go into something like that.
Marriage saying,
but,
oh, you know, we're going to make him into, you know, a refined person. He'll dive in every day and he'll go to every... It's not going to happen.
No,
you know?
But that's unclear. It's unclear that's what would have happened here, that she would get married at that stage either. Okay. I want to take a look at the Ramban before we go into the actual battle with the angel. We're going to bounce back a little bit back and forth just to make sure you stay awake. In the Ramban, the blue sheets, we are going to do 194. Just two quick Ramban, and then we'll get into our actual battle. Page 194 in the blue sheets, the Ramban comments, again, on verse 22, V'hulon balayla hu v'machaneh. So Yaakov sends over all of these gifts, and then he goes to sleep that night in the camp. Says the Ramban, the Torah is saying that he did not go into his tent that night. Why do we know he slept that night in the camp? All this detail, this is what we asked when we just read through all the verses. What's with this detail that he slept that night in the camp? Why are we being told this? Says the Ramban, the Torah, he did not even go into his tent that night. Rather, he spent the night out of doors in the camp with his servants and the shepherds of the flocks, prepared like a man of war for the possibility that his brother would come at night and strike at him. So the Torah is setting us up for the battle that we're about to read with this angel. Setting us up that Yaakov, after sending all of his gifts, he is a man uneasy. He is sleeping that night in the camp. He's not even in his tent. He's out there in the flocks with the shepherds out in the field. He is ready and prepared. And then the Torah tells us in Chaf Gimel 23, which we read, Vayakam Balayla, he got up that night. He couldn't even spend the whole night out there in the field. He gets up and he says, we all got to cross the river right now in the middle of the night. Says the Ramban, why? If you read the introductory paragraph on the very bottom of 194, the way the order that the Torah tells us here in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, he gets up, he takes his two wives, he takes his two maidservants, he takes his 11 sons, and then they cross. Later we're going to see the opposite order. Says the Ramban, flipping to the top of 195, this Pasuk Ein Mukta Mumu'uchar B'Pasuk Azela Hatzala. There's no specific chronological order regarding to how he's saving everybody. Don't be bothered by the order, whether or not he's taking his wives first or his children first. Rather, it says that he gathered his wives and maidservants and children to the bank of the brook, and then he crossed the ford of the Yabok himself to see if the water was too high to pass through. And when he saw it was indeed passable, he took with him all. He took all of them with him as one and brought them across the brook. And then he took over all of his possessions, his livestock and his property. Fine, Rabbeinus gives us a sense, again, the picture as to what's going on. Okay, now Yaakov is going to be left alone, and that's where we'll pick up again. Let's read these verses, get the whole picture of what's about to take place, and then we'll see the commentary. The Rephoshes is one simple line in this, but he's going to have lots to say on this actual battle between Yaakov and this man. So we'll get to Rephosh in a little bit. Okay, let's read this story again. Let's just read it through the verses straight for a few minutes, for a few verses. Starting with 25. Chafei, we're back in the white sheet. Sorry for making you crazy. Page 370. Okay, so again, setting up where we are. See, he's taken all of his possessions, his wives, his children, and he's crossed over this Yabok little ford, this little river. And then the Torah tells us, Vayivaser Yaakov levadon. Yaakov was left alone. Which, when we told him, like, what do you mean he's left alone? He's got his whole family, he's got his shepherds, he's got his flock, he's got all his possessions. He just crossed over the Yabok River. Vayivaser Yaakov levadon. But he was left alone. Vayeyovik ish imo. And a man wrestled with him. Ad alos hashachar. So again, until the daybreak. Because where are we now? It's the middle of the night. Why are we in the middle of the night? Yaakov can't sleep. He was spending the night out there in the field with his men, ready for war. And then Vayakum Balailahu, he couldn't even get through the whole night. He says, we have to cross over the Yabok River. Crosses everybody over. And then he's left alone. And then a man comes. Torah doesn't tell us who this man is. And Vayeyovik. And they wrestle. Until when? Break of dawn. Vayar kilo yachol lo. And he perceived that he could not overcome him. Who could not overcome who?
The man.
The man cannot overcome Yaakov, which we pointed out there for men. So what was the assumption of the man who started up here with this wrestling match? Assumption, why do you start a fight? You only pick a fight with somebody who you think you're going to win. You don't necessarily start a fight with somebody who's going to pulverize you. So the man starts up a fight. Is man, he sees indeed that he's wrong, that he cannot overcome him. Vayigal b'chaf yirecho, so he strikes the ball of his thigh bone. Vateka kaf yerech Yaakov behe'ovko imo, and the ball of Yaakov's thigh bone became dislocated as he wrestled with him. Vayomer shalcheini, and then he said, let me go, ki Allah hashachar, because dawn has broken. Vayomer lo ashalechecha ki im beirach tani. And he said, I will not let you go unless you have blessed me. Comments, questions? Let's just go through this again. So just going over what we had done as we went through this right away. So somehow, obviously, dawn is key here. Dawn is mentioned several times. The Torah tells us in the beginning of the battle that it lasted until the dawn. Now the Torah tells us after this man was unable to be victorious that he dislocates the hip joint socket of Yaakov, and then he says, it's dawn, I have to go. And Yaakov says, I won't. And we mentioned here there's a reversal here. How did the battle start? Who started up with who? This man starts up thinking he's going to be victorious. Then what happens? He can't win, but what does he do? So he's able to do something. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? Then he says, let me go. So who's in charge now? Now it's Yaakov. Yaakov's saying, I was able to sort of end up arm in arm with you. You are able to harm me, but I'm not letting you go. Until when? Until you bless me.
A hint of Mashiach times?
We're going to see a lot of hints in here. Vayomer Elav, so this man says, Ma Shemecha, what is your name? Vayomer Yaakov. He's had a very strange dialogue. Yaakov is saying, now you have to bless me. So we're looking here for a blessing. That's what Yaakov wants. So what is it? What is it going to take? It's going to take a blessing. So we've seen lots of blessings. What do blessings generally look like in the Torah? You should be blessed from the dew of the heavens and the fat of the earth and all sorts of good things. So Yaakov's looking for a blessing. And what does he get? So tell me your name. So we have a man who starts up with Yaakov, beats him up. Yaakov holds him back and says, now you have to bless me. And he says, okay, well, what's your name? He says, my name is Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov v'yeyemer od shemecha ki im Yisrael. We will no longer call your name Yaakov, but im Yisrael. Ki, flipping to the other side of the page. Sarisa im Elohim v'im anashim v'atuchal. You have argued, fought, battled with both the divine and with man, and you have overcome. Now, did Yaakov win this battle? Who won this battle? Jah?
Yes. That's how you look at it.
Did the angel or man, whoever it is, get hurt?
No. He can't get hurt. It's one message here.
Okay, so we have here the angel. Now, first of all, is this a blessing?
Yaakov
wants a blessing. He says, I don't know how, if we were scoring this wrestling match, we would give very little information. All we're given is, this man starts up with Yaakov, sees that he can't overcome him, but he's able to damage him. So we'd score one for this man. But then he says, let me go. And Yaakov says, I got the death grip on you. I'm not letting you go until I decide to let you go. So, I don't know, a draw, we'll call it what we'll call it. But now he says, bless me. So he says, what's my blessing to you? Your name should not be called Yaakov, it will be called Yisrael. Now he has to ask him what his name is, which is interesting that he doesn't know what his name is. He says, what's your name, Yaakov? It won't be Yaakov, it'll be Yisrael. And what does the name Yisrael represent? You have battled with the divine, with man, and you have been victorious. Vatu Chal. Okay, let's just finish this up, and then we'll go back and see what the Rashi, Ramban, and Rav Hirsch have to say about this. Vayishal Yaakov. So Yaakov seems to be satisfied with his blessing. Mm-hmm. That's it, great. Amen. Now I'm called Yisrael, and that is my blessing. Then Yaakov turns the tables. Vayishal Yaakov, Vayomer Hagidon Hashemecha. You tell me now your name. Vayomer Loma Zetishal Lishmi, Vayivarech Oso Sham. He says, why do you want to know my name? And then we have that repetition, Vayivarech Oso Sham. And then he blessed him there. Now, is that a new blessing, or is that a statement that he successfully blessed him? We're going to have to go back over this here as we go through this. In other words, Yaakov speaks. Yaakov asks for a blessing. He tells him he's going to have a new name. Then Yaakov speaks. He says, well, what's your name? Now, believe me, they're not like chit-chatting. Like, I introduce myself, and you say, okay, that's fair enough. Tell me what your name is, right? So Yaakov gets his new name, and then he says, well, what's your name? And this man, who the Torah has not yet told us is an angel, this man says, what do you need to know my name for? And then he blesses him. Okay, Rashi, we're going to start with this on the bottom of 369. He passed over everything that was his onto the other side. And the last line there on page 369, Havahem of Amitalplin, the animals and the movable goods. He made himself like a ferryman who takes from one side and sets down on the other. So Rashi tells us from Chazal again, says if Yaakov was in the middle of the river, taking everything from one side and moving it to the other. Taking it from one side and moving it to the other. And then somehow he ends up alone. Says Rashi, Vayivaser, Yaakov was left. He had forgotten some small jars, shochach pachim ketan, and one of the more oft-quoted Rashi's in Chumash, v'chazar alim. He went back for them. So Yaakov realizes as he's moving all of his camp, you ever had to pack up all your stuff after the summer, you were away for 3-4 weeks somewhere, and now you're packing them all, I forgot something. So he's got these small little jugs that he went back for.
Why are they so important?
Excellent, says Rashi, mikan, we see from here, that the righteous treat their property with care, that they should not send forth their hands at theft. Shelo yishluchu yedeim begazer. There are different versions of this medrash. We'll get back to this. There's lots to talk about this. Let's just set up as what happened. Rashi quotes, Ramban's going to deal with this, Rafurj is going to deal with this. Chazal understand, why is Yaakov alone? He's got a big camp with him. He's got 4 wives, 11 children. He's got servants and maidservants, and he's got shepherds, and he ends up alone. And why were these jugs not taken with everything else? Everything else has been passed over. There must have been some small little jugs or something of a general we would consider insignificance. And Yaakov goes back to get them. And while he's back there getting them, this wrestling match takes place. Ekevi, bottom line is we find Yaakov going back for Pach and Ketanim. Chazal quotes, the version here that Rashi quotes here is that they treat their property with care, that they should not have to, it seems like almost like steal something else. There are other versions of the Medrash that since they don't steal anything, so everything they have has been rightfully earned, it is theirs, and they treat their property carefully, nothing goes to waste. If you have something, it's because it's yours, and you treat it well. And so Yaakov goes back even to retrieve these small pachin ketanim. We will talk more about that, but let's leave it here for now. Vayeovik ish. And a man comes, and now we have it already translated as wrestle. But where did that word come from as wrestling? So Rashi tells us from Menachem. Anyone at the great Jewish controversies class, I quoted Menachem. Menachem was one of the great Spanish leaders of Spanish Jew, and the Jews made their way out of Babylonia up the Iberian Peninsula into Spain, so they settled down over there, and there were a number of very famous Spaniards who, because of the way that the culture was over there, developed in different ways. One of them was Menachem ben Saruk, who created a vocabulary dictionary out of the Chumash, so he is quoted very often by Rashi. This is one of those situations. Menachem explained that this is as vayis afer ish, like dusted, that the word avek is related to dust, and that through they would raise dust through their movements with their feet, and that therefore becomes that they would fight. And when you wrestle, you create dust, gets kicked up in the air as you wrestle, and therefore the word vayeyovek ish has to do with wrestling. And we'll see the Ramban is going to have a little different take on that, but that's what it means, vayeyovek ish. Imo Rashi says they wrestle together as the word relates to kicking up of the dust. The man sees in verse 26 that he cannot. Oh, excuse me, with the seat and the bottom half of that Rashi. The last four words of that Rashi, we just finished at the end of verse 25. It is the way of two people who are struggling to topple each other that one hugs and ties up the other with his arms. And our rabbis of blessed memory explained that Shehu Saro Shel Esav, that he, the man of our verse, was the ministering angel of Esav. So here Rashi quotes what is, most people when they hear about this story, they naturally assume that Yaakov is fighting with the angel of Esav, because that's what Chazal tells us, as Rashi quotes. The Torah used the word Ish, it was a man. And Rashi quotes here, and we'll deal with it from here on out, as it is the ministering angel of Esav. This is a battle between Yaakov and the force, so to speak, of Esav, preluding to the actual confrontation that Yaakov was about to have with Esav. He has this wrestling match with the Saro Shel Esav, the ministering angel of Esav. We'll tuck this away and we'll get back to it as we tie together all the different things that Rashi Rabban and Rafersh has to say. What does this Saro Shel Esav, this ministering angel of Esav, do when he sees that he cannot overcome Yaakov? Now again, putting it in the context of what happened, why does the Saro Shel Esav start off with Yaakov? He sees Yaakov alone. He's by himself. He's removed from his family. He's obviously convinced that he can take him out. But he sees that he can't. Yaakov puts up a fight. So what he does is Vayiga Bekaf Yerecho, he strikes the ball of his thigh bone, and Rashi gives us exactly where this is, the upper end of the thigh bone, which starts with a hip socket, literally called the spoon, because the flesh upon it has the shape of a stirring spoon. We'll see in Rafersh is going to have a long piece about this. This is the part that joins, basically, the leg to the hip, which, as you mentioned, is the ability to walk, the ability to move, to be mobile, and the angel of Esav, when he sees that he cannot overcome Yaakov, will damage the ability of Yaakov to move, to walk, by damaging that hip socket. And Rafersh will have a beautiful piece which we'll get to, most likely next week, as to what the significance of that is. Verse 27, the angel then says, at dawn, I have to leave. Why is it so significant, says Rashi? I must recite Shira, Tzarech Ani Lomar Shira Bayom, during the day. Why is dawn so significant? So Chazal see, well, if you understand that the person doing the battle here is an actual Sar of Esav, is an angel, it's at daybreak that the angels come to minister before Hashem and to sing their Shira, and therefore the ministering angel says, I need to go sing. I need to go say my praises before the Ribono Shel Olam, the Creator. You have to let me go so I can do my job. Yaakov says, I will on one condition. You bless me first, says Rashi. What's with the blessing, says Rashi? Hodeli al habrachos. What I want you to do is to acknowledge, to admit, to concede to me the blessings, sheberchani, avi, that my father blessed me, she'esav me'ar'er alayin, over which Esav objects. Now, if you remember, from the very beginning of this parsha, this third episode, in which Yaakov sends the angels to Esav to tell him that he's coming, we've seen throughout Rashi and Ramban, one reference after another, that what was on primary in Yaakov's mind? To address this blessing issue. If you remember how the commentators pointed out, Yaakov says, look, I'm very, very wealthy, but the type of wealth I have is in cattle. Why did he say that? because the blessing that my father gave me was from the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. I didn't get any of that. I got cattle. That's not the crops. It's not the fatness. It's not from the dew of the heaven. It's not out of the earth. It's possession. You see, the blessings never came true. And he keeps calling himself a servant, a slave. I'm a nobody. I haven't become anything. The blessings of greatness, they haven't come true. So we found numerous references in which Yaakov is constantly trying to address. I don't want to stir the pot as far as that goes. And now Yaakov fights with the angel, and what does he say? Bless me, says Rashi. He doesn't mean give me a blessing as much as he's saying, acknowledge that the blessings that I got, concede them to me, that they're mine. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I don't want to have to fight with Esav over it. Acknowledge them as mine. So we ask, where's the blessing in changing his name? Says Rashi, again quoting from Chazal. So if you put the two together, you'll see exactly what's going on. Why is the blessing of the name change going to address what the blessing that Yaakov really wanted? Because the blessing that he wanted was, I already have a blessing. I don't need a blessing from you. The only blessing I want from you is, you'll concede the point that they're mine. So the angel says, well, what's your name? I'm going to change it to Yisrael. Let's look at Rashi inside in verse 29. No longer will it be said that your name is Yaakov. No longer will it be said that the blessings came to you be'akva or mi'ah, through treachery and deceit. Now, if you remember, we spent a lot of time when we learned through episode number 1, the very first time that we're introduced to Yaakov at Esav. How are we introduced to Yaakov? What's he doing? Holding on to the heel. So he's called Yaakov because he's on the heel. And then in episode number 2, when the boys grow up and he swindles the blessings, and what's Esav's response when he figures out what happened? He said, "Hallo ze lo kara shemo Yaakov." Isn't this why they called his name Yaakov? Right? Yaakveni pa amayim. Twice he swindled me now. He swindled me when I sold him the birthright for a bowl of lentils when I was going to die of hunger. And then he swindled me today when he stole my blessings. So Yaakov is an appropriate name. And we saw the pieces from our first who describe what's with the heel. Heel also means Akev is Akev Tishmoon. It's the reward you'll receive at the end. And Akev always has a connotation of, at the very end, things are going in one direction, one direction, one direction, and at the very end, somehow it gets flipped around. Which is refers to, that's how we look for our reward. We're not doing things looking for a reward. We're doing things because that's what needs to happen. At the end, that's what's going to happen. That's not how we present. That's why you find all these different words of Akev. So the angel says to Yaakov, Yaakov has a negative connotation to it. It has this connotation that you're a swindler, that you got the blessings with deceit and with treachery. And as long as you're called that, Esav is going to have complaints. He's going to have tainas on you that you took it from him. So I'm going to change your name. Now again, we're going to see in a second, he's not actually authorized to change his name. He's actually going to be prophesizing now what Hashem is going to do later. Hashem is going to actually be the one to change Yaakov's name. But he's saying, we will be changing your name. Because no longer Yaakov, because Yaakov has this connotation of deceit and treachery, but rather through authority. Ki'im b'srara. Yisrael, the language of a sar. Sar is an officer, somebody with authority. Vigilui panim, and in full view, doesn't have to be hidden. When you received those blessings, you were dressed up, Yaakov. You were dressed up as Esav when you received those blessings. Now, this battle is somehow going to reflect a change. The fact that you were victorious in this battle, you're no longer going to go by the name Yaakov. V'sovcho, your destiny shall be Shachadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, Nigla Elov beveis El, will reveal himself in Beis El. Umachlev Shimcham will change your name. Vesham Hu Mivarchach, and there he will bless you. Va'ani Sham Eheye, and I shall be there. Ve'oiducha L'cho Alehen, and I shall concede to you with regard to them there. Shikot, that's what's referred to in the pasuk, as we'll see later on. Vayosar El Malach Vayuchal Bocha Vayishanim, a pasuk in the Navi, that he ruled over an angel and triumphed, and he cried and appealed to him. Bocha Hamalach, the angel cried and he appealed to him. How did he appeal to him? By saying that at Beis El he will find you, and there he will speak with us. And that's where Hashem is going to eventually change his name, and where the angel is going to concede to him the blessings over here in our story. And this, says Rashi, getting to the end of that paragraph, is what was implied by the pasuk of Ayivarech Oso Sham, and he blessed him there, which we are going to see in a few verses, which you just read a moment ago. The end, after Yaakov then says, well, what's your name? And he says, you don't need to know my name. Vayivarech Oso Sham. and he blessed him there. Says Rashi, that's actually a reference, for he appealed to him to give him time, but he did not want to. That the angel there had to concede it to him, and this is the blessing that Yaakov desired, was actually just this conceding to him of the blessings. And the name Yisrael is a language of Srara, a language of authority, a language of revealed, not dressed up, not hidden, not swindled. You will have that new name. Now, who did the angel say you wrestled with the divine and with man? The divine was a reference to himself. And with man, says Rashi, Esav and Lavan. With Esav and with Lavan, you have encountered these two people, and you have emerged victorious over both of them. Okay, so that's his blessing. So is it really, it's not so much a blessing in as much as it is what Yaakov really requests when he said to bless me, concede to me the blessings. And he says, I will, and I'll refer that by changing your name to a name that reflects not taking the blessings with deceit and with treachery, but with an open, revealed authority. And then Yaakov turns around and says, well, what's your name? To which Rashi comments, the angel responds, why are you asking me my name? It says Rashi, Ein lanu shem kavua. What I mean to say, why are you asking me my name, is there's no answer to that question. We don't have a name. Mishtanim shemoseinu, our names change according to the command of the task of the mission, she'anu mishtalchem, for whatever it is that we are sent. We don't have a name. Yaakov says, you represent the Tsar of Esav. You represent that power of Esav. What's your name? And he says, I don't have a name. Our names change. The Bali Musar all speak about this Rashi. We've found allusions to all of Jewish history in this story. From one to the other, we'll tie hopefully all together when we get through the whole thing. But Ramban has pointed out many allusions as to how, just like Yaakov invited this fight by starting up with him, that the Jewish people are going to invite the Romans in, and how all the battles are going to take place, our names are going to be changed soon. A lot of allusions here. This is an allusion to Yaakov says, okay, I just had the battle with the force that I'm going to be fighting with for a 2,000-year exile. Just had the battle. And I emerged damaged, but alive. What's your name? What does the name represent? Always an essence. Hashem always represents the Shem, the there, the name, the essence of what a person... Who am I fighting? What are you? What's your name? And the angel says, I don't have a name to tell you. Because dependent on my mission, my name changes. And all the Bali Musar point out, in 2,000 years of exile, what is it that the Jewish people face? What is the task of the Tsar of Esav, the angel of Esav that's going to come to attack us? Changes. There's no name. It's nameless, but dependent on its mission, has a different name. Mm-hmm. Always there, always present, always wrestling with the ability to damage, but doesn't have a definitive name. Because then throughout the ages there have always have been the different challenges and the different tasks that the Jewish people have always had to fight. But I don't have a name to tell you. See, first we'll talk about this a little bit more when we get there, Mishnah, in his beautiful poetic language. But that's what Rashi says right here. Lama zat tishol, I don't need to know my name for? You don't need to know my name. You don't need to know my name because my name is always changing, but you always have to be prepared for that battle with whatever it is that my name will be. We will have that battle and we will be prepared for that. Well, we'll see. The next Rashi is that the sun is going to shine. And when the sun shines, Rashi is going to quote it. It's a sun of charity, a sun of healing that's going to heal Yaakov. And that, again, as we see all the allusions, in the middle of the night is the battle, and then dawn is going to break. Mm-hmm. And when dawn breaks, dawn brings with it the light. Mm-hmm. Dawn brings with it the clarity. Brings with it healing. And Yaakov then sends away the angel, who then sings its own song to Hashem.
Interesting, the singing.
Which is what's going to, even the Tsar of Esav, which has been attacking us and bothering us, will eventually come and sing its own praise. These are all part of the illusion. We have to go through the nitty gritty. We got to get through all the details. We got to get through everything. Put it out there, and then you see the picture that emerges of the illusions of the dawn, the light, the healing. We're not there. We're still in the middle of the battle with this nameless Malach, which has the ability to name. We'll see next week. We'll see first his beautiful words on all the allegories and the illusion behind this particular battle. Night, day, healing, socket. What does that mean? So Rashi, as we've seen, is, you know, it's a little choppy, so to speak. That Rashi doesn't tell us a story the way Rav Hirsch is going to write the story. But yes, he gives us all the information we need to then put it into and understand the whole picture. But that's, you know, step at a time, step at a time. We'll get there. All right. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.